Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Happy Hearthstone podcast. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I am joined by a new guest, Nathan Slight Wirtz. Hello, Nate.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's good to have you here. Do you prefer Nathan or Nate?
I prefer Nathan.
Nathan, yeah. All right. I like it. Very formal. I feel like I should have dressed nicer. I'm wearing my pajamas right now.
Thanks, man. I'm wearing swim trunks, so...
Are you really? That's fantastic.
Man. Isn't it?
Well done.
You just got to have fun.
So, Nathan, for people that don't know you, I didn't know you actually as of like 2 weeks ago. You sent an email, had an idea for a show, a topic for the show. Can you just tell people a little bit about why you're here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm actually the creator / founder of a new tournament in the Hearthstone scene called Hearth Wars. And basically what we're looking at doing is creating a new tournament format for Hearth Wars. Think of online poker where you have buy-ins from each of the players and it amounts to one big player pool or prize pool, and then players compete, and it's a completely new format that we're going to be introducing, and it's not going to be winner takes all because that's boring and no one wants to be a part of that. So yeah. Depending on the prize pool amount, there'll be different prizes. So let's say first, second, third, and then fifth through eighth, or fourth through eighth may have varying amounts. So...
Very cool. So have you been doing this sort of thing for a while, or did you just really love Hearthstone and wanted to do this?
So I've actually been adminning in the esports scene for about a year now. I started with the Esports League, National ESL, as a League of Legends admin for quite a while, probably 6 to 8 months, which for me is a long time.
Yeah. In the games industry in general, that's a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of friends who've been here for years, so they always like to make fun of me that I'm new to esports, but I feel like I've been in it forever. It's just such a welcoming community. So I started in League of Legends, and then once I found out about Hearthstone, and I mean, it was relatively unknown to me probably up to 3 to 4 months ago, and then it really boomed. I got in kind of right before the open beta, and I just fell in love with it, as cliche as that sounds. I played Yu-Gi-Oh! As a kid, and I really had a lot of fun, but I didn't travel, I didn't compete, it was a card game to me. It was just something to do to have fun, and so when I found this, it was, mind-blowing to have the support of a company like Blizzard and then create such a fantastic game based off of World of Warcraft. Like, that is awesome.
Yeah. So. You don't have to feel silly about saying you fell in love with it either. Everyone listening to this podcast knows exactly what you mean.
Good.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit more about your specific tournament and everything later and kind of as we go through the show. So listeners, don't worry. You'll be able to find out all about it, how to get involved if you want to and all that sort of stuff. But Nate had this idea to kind of talk about, tournaments in general and like – expand it beyond even to just like running your own community events, launching your own online tournaments, getting involved in kind of this. Esports is kind of intimidating, right? Because you think esports and you think like, well, that's only for like Raynad, right. Like the people like way up there. But there's a lot of ways like this tournament is such a great idea with, I believe it's a $10 buy-in, right, on yours?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, like that's totally accessible. Like just jump in for $10 and see how you do. It's like, I don't want to say like semi-pro, because it's not even that, right? It's just like, it's a competitive way to play.
It's a competitive community event. You know, anyone can do it.
Yeah, so we're going to spend this episode talking about community events, kind of how to run them, some tips, some tools, all that sort of stuff, and just how to get involved in community events like this. But before we get into that, Nathan, let's talk about why we're happy this week, as we always do. I'll go first. My son is now 2 weeks away from his due date, which is crazy, and everything seems healthy so far.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's so great.
It's starting to get into that panic mode, right? Where like, technically it could happen any day now. My wife could go into labor, but don't worry.
Every time you're every time your phone goes off, you check it just to make sure.
Exactly. Yeah, and every time she like makes a noise, like she's in pain, just like look over, like how severe is this? Is this a trouble? No, she just stubbed her toe. Okay, we're good. We're good.
Okay, great. My car keys were already in my hand.
Yeah, exactly. Halfway down to the car.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. That's awesome, Thanks. Man.
Yeah, so why are you happy, Nathan?
After 3 to 4 weeks of intense work. I mean, my team and I have been putting in anywhere from 50 to 80 hours a week, like individual. We are going live with Hearth Wars tomorrow. And let me tell you, putting in so much work, it's just such a relief to finally have that like culmination of all your effort, you know?
Oh yeah.
So it's going to be great. It's going to be a fantastic show. And we'll be able to talk about that a little more later on.
Yeah, and we'll put links into the show notes and all that stuff once it's all happened, and so everyone can go check it out. So I'm kind of surprised you're here recording with me the day before. Are you not in like last minute panic mode? You sound pretty calm.
You know, I think I hit last minute panic mode last night. I stayed up till probably 4:35 a.m. my time, and I had to work at 8 o'clock. And
oh man.
Yeah, and I was just freaking out. I was like, man, do we have everything right? I like to double check, triple check, quadruple check. I am OCD when it comes to making sure everything is perfect. So I hit that last night, and I'm sure I'll hit it again later tonight, but right now I'm just trying to enjoy the show. So
that's good. All right, so rule number one of getting involved in community events, don't want sleep and have good stress management skills, it sounds like.
Well, those definitely help. If you don't sleep, then clearly you can get more work done, so that's great. And right. Stress management always helps.
Well, I'm actually reassured to hear that you're crazy OCD about that kind of stuff, because that's exactly what I want in like tournament managers, right? Because if I'm going to play in a tournament, I want to know that you're up till 5 in the morning making sure everything's working so that it's going to run well.
Well, guess what? I'm up till 5:30 in the morning making sure it's run well.
Good man. Good man. All right. So the topics today, like we already kind of said, we're going to break it down to like three parts, essentially, you know, how to host these things, why you would want to host a community event, and then a bunch of tools to help you host without having to hopefully stay up till 5 in the morning every night, at least. So let's start with the most basic question, Nathan. Kind of what sort of community events are there?
So Hearthstone is really in its infancy right now, but there are a lot of good to great community events going on right now. Just a couple are like ESL America. They've got weekly tournaments, I think, every Wednesday and Sunday. You can check the times and whatnot on websites. I think we'll actually post them afterwards. They're the Zotac Cups. They have their own sites, and I mean, they're 500 people or such. A lot of these people are just players that are new and want to sign up. They go to the website, put in their battle tag, and that's it. So easy to sign up. Yeah, I know, it's great.
That's crazy how easy it is. So you don't have to like prove that you're a certain rank or anything like that?
No, not at all. I mean, I know with some of the ESL Cups, we have people that are top 100 legendary playing against people who have two decks, and it's it's so much fun because, I mean, it's almost like a pro player versus common man interaction. And I don't know how many times I've been in an IRC chat or something and someone said, oh my gosh, I'm versus, et cetera, et cetera. And they're just freaking out because whether they win or lose, they got to play against a pro player that they saw on stream. So,
it's great. Yeah. I would happily lose to Raynad. That'd be awesome.
For sure. A couple other mentions, Gosu Cup and then Soulfire Sunday, go on. Both really good cups, and I'd recommend people checking them out.
Very cool. So I got to jump in here because you mentioned, you know, people with only two decks. So with these tournaments, are all of them basically people using their own accounts, or is there ever like a tournament account where you get all the cards and get to build from that just for the tournament?
You know, that's an interesting idea. I haven't actually heard of that being used in setting, and most of the time I think that is because for the common man, you have your own account. You don't have too much time if you're working or you're going to school or whatnot to really put in a lot of time and get a lot of cards and collect them. And for professional players, they play so much, they have all the cards and they want to be in every tournament. So all the professionals are going to be in that cup, and there's no real, I guess, no real way to share accounts, I guess, to kind of culminate cards. So, I mean, it's an idea. If you had a group of friends, it would be a great idea. You just all play on one account, and then obviously you'd run into issues if you both wanted, or two people wanted to play at the same time. But,
yeah.
But I guess it'd be easier to collect cards, that's for sure.
Yeah. Although I'm guessing account sharing probably goes against Blizzard's EULA, so I can't officially endorse that.
Probably.
But it does sound fun, just say that.
But technically, I think it would be easier to get cards, so...
Yes, technically that is correct. Morally ambivalent.
We'll just agree to leave that up in the air.
Yeah. All right, so outside of tournaments, what other kind of events are there?
So you've got things like social gatherings. I know Blizzard had the fireside gatherings or whatnot, where they'd encourage people to LAN, and if they did so, they got different card backings. I actually did that a couple times. I went to actually a hookah bar, and I'm not saying smoking is good for you kids, but I went to a hookah bar and found a guy who was playing Hearthstone on a tablet, and so we went ahead and played right there and got the backing. It's pretty cool. So
that's pretty awesome. So I have to ask, as someone who's fairly socially awkward, how do you start that conversation? Do you just walk over and be like, I like that game too, you want to play?
Oh my goodness, man. See, here's the thing about the Hearthstone community. Everyone is incredible. And and I don't normally just generalize a huge group of people together, but coming from the League of Legends scene, where everything is just so notoriously toxic, mm-hmm. when you come to Hearthstone, I mean, the worst BM is what? Saying PJ Salt?
Yeah.
whatever. So I've actually done it a couple times, different cafes, hookah bars, things like that, where I've just approached people that I saw playing, and I'm not a super socially awkward guy, but I say, hey, what's going on? I saw you're playing Hearthstone. And that kind of strikes up a conversation in its own. And one thing I found is gamers are super passionate about gaming. I mean, that's what makes us what we are.
Yeah.
So if someone walked up and asked me about my game I was playing, I don't think I'd turn them away, you know?
Yeah.
So I probably have 6 or 7 friends that I met in real life on my friends list. So that's pretty cool.
That is really cool. All right. You inspired me. I'm trying to do more impromptu community events. There you go.
We have to set a goal for all of our viewers. Approach one person playing Hearthstone.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Before the next episode, which may be a little while because, you know, the baby's coming, you know, so you have an extra time, find at least one person playing, approach them, and talk about it. You don't have to play them in case you don't have your tablet with you or anything, but at least talk with them about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't be afraid to. It's one of those things, like I said, gamers like to talk to other gamers. Like,
yeah.
Go up there, say, hey, what deck's you running? What do you think is the best deck? What do you think you could do to improve your deck? Hey, here are some of my suggestions, you know?
Yeah.
So,
pro tip, don't mock their deck, even if it's terrible. Don't do that.
Yeah. Pro tip, if they don't have all the basic cards unlocked, don't walk away laughing.
Yeah. Excellent tip. All right. Good challenge and tip coming from Nathan. This show is great already.
Thanks for having me on again, man.
Yeah, I think you pretty much covered it. I think we're done. You got everything right there.
I think so. Just all in one.
Now, I know League of Legends just announced their first varsity college team. There are some kind of school clubs, at least for Hearthstone as well, right?
Yeah, so again, Hearthstone's in its infancy, but it's one of the, I mean, fastest growing games that there is. And I've always idea of, I wasn't a huge follower of Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that love Magic the Gathering, and I was super surprised when I actually started doing research into it, but it is like a national, international movement. Like, it is crazy how passionate people are about it. I live in Virginia, and so there was actually a huge event in Richmond a while back, right around the time I started getting into Hearthstone, where it was like tens of thousands of people went to a place up in Richmond from around the country for Magic the Gathering. And I was like, why would you do that? That seems crazy.
Yeah.
But as I started playing Hearthstone, I was like, this is kind of the equivalent of Magic the Gathering, except better, of course.
So but, it finally clicked with you, like, oh, I would travel around to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. But the nice thing about Hearthstone is it's online. It's accessible to everyone. You have it on your tablets. I mean, you hopefully, I mean, they should be releasing it on Android tablets. You can do it from your computer. So this is one of those things that it's not limited to the constraints that Magic is. And as big a movement as Magic is, we have people coming from there already joining Hearthstone. So the growth for this is exponential, especially with the new release that'll be coming. I mean, as expansions come and I guess the word is kind of put out more towards everyone, it's going to be, I think, one of the largest games, if not the largest game in esports, for sure.
The potential is there, man. It's growing every single day. And that, and you kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, it's online, you know, different than Magic. Because that allows, like, online tournaments, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the tournaments you're running, those are all online. Is that true?
Yes, sir, all of them. We haven't had one event in person, so.
Yeah, I mean, that just makes it so much more accessible to anybody that wants to play.
Yeah, it's great. The thing that I really do like it about esports and that we host tournaments online is that we can't discriminate. We can't say, oh, he's 13 years old, he's not allowed to play, or, oh, he's 58, he's not allowed to play. It's one of those things like, his name is Tom, his name is Jim, that's it.
Yeah.
Tom versus Jim.
Yeah, Tom versus Jim, so. They both have Battle.net accounts, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's you don't even have to check that they own the game, because it's a free game, so it's just...
Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. I was actually working today, and my coworker was like, oh, that looks like fun. And he goes, so how much does it cost to play? Well, it's free to download. Yeah, but how much does it cost as far as like monthly reoccurring fees? Oh, it's free. Oh, boy. That sounds like a game I would like.
Yeah, no joke, man.
And you could see that glint in his eyes. Man, Hearthstone just got another follower.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Especially if like they're sitting there surrounded by, because I've talked with a few people like this that have spent like thousands of dollars on Magic the Gathering over the years. Mm-hmm. And like, wait, I could be having this sort of fun, but not be paying thousands of dollars. Yes. Right.
Granted, you can buy decks.
Yeah.
And card packs, but you don't have to. That's the good thing about Hearthstone.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing on this list that actually I hadn't heard of before, I'm really curious. This last type of community event is a strategy chat. Tell me more. I don't understand.
Okay, so I am actually in a couple of these because I like to learn about Hearthstone, the strategies, the meta, what's good, what's bad, what decks are just broken, which ones you would never run because it's so bad.
Yeah.
So just for instance, I'm in a chat with a bunch of, let's say, top North American players in which during tournaments and things like that, we're all in the chat and most of us are just watching it on our second monitors or whatnot. And as we watch other people play, we'll throw out, oh, why did he do that? He could have done this. He could have improved by doing some other play. And it's just one of those things that when we have ideas, we can throw it into the chat. And it, believe it or not, it, because when you have a lot of players, granted, these are some of the top North American players, but when you have players all together assembled into one group where you can throw out ideas freely without any concern about, oh, what will people think of me? How will they judge me? Then it really does allow for better decks, just to be brought about.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Just kind of having that, watching a game and talking about it and not having the distraction that is the terribleness of something like Twitch chat, right? Like,
yeah.
You can actually be focused on the strategy and talk and have real conversations.
For sure.
So so how do people get involved with these sort of chats? Is this something like these are long-standing chat rooms that anyone can join? Do you have to be invited?
So for the one that I use, I actually make it a point to kind of keep it more exclusive, mm-hmm. just for the one that I'm referring to. And the reason for that is because we really do want to shape the meta, so we don't want as bad as it sounds, we don't want someone of my skill and caliber in the chat throwing out ideas, which everyone just knows would never work.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there are a lot of them out there where friends just get their friends together, make a chat, and then start talking about the game. And that's really how it starts. So if you play with a group of five or six people, or even if you have, I mean, if you're friends with, let's say, three people that don't know each other, putting them all into the same chat room and being like, hey, there's a Hearth Wars going on tomorrow. Let's watch it together. Like, that's just how it starts. You can start talking, and talking will lead to learning. And once you've learned enough, you can start teaching, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Well, bam, add that to your checklist for what you need to do when you go talk up to a stranger at the coffee shop playing Hearthstone. Invite them to your chat room. Do you use, like, just IRC, or do you have any recommendation for where
most of the time? Most of the time I just use Skype because it's convenient. It just allows for everyone to talk at once without the hassle of IRC. I'm not a huge fan of IRC just because I've had to use it for a lot of tournaments, but that's just personal preference.
Yeah.
Raid call is also really good, but I like Skype because you can actually go back and read the chat log.
Oh, yeah. It's just right there.
Yep. It's just right there. Super easy, super convenient.
Very cool. All right, so those are kind of the types of events. For people listening, if they're trying to decide whether they want to try and host an event or just participate in an event, can you kind of give some tips, like how should people pick which kind of event they should get involved in?
As far as like online or offline sort of thing?
Yeah, online, offline, you know, how do you pick which kind of tournament? Are you just looking at like the prize pool, or how do you pick like, oh, well, this is the tournament for me because I know it's going to be my skill level. Is there any sort of indicator for that sort of stuff?
So the thing with Hearthstone, again, it's in its infancy. I mean, you'll hear me continue to say that. So with these community cups that are going on, if it's open to everyone, you've got to realize that it's open to everyone, and there are going to be people from every skill level going into it. So it's RNG based. When you enter in, you could be matched against one of the top 100 in North America, and that shouldn't discourage you. That should just motivate you to play better and learn more from him while you're playing. Or you could be matched up against your brother playing in the next room, who is a lot worse than you. So it's one of those things that you just really have to put yourself out there, go onto the website, sign up, take the 5-10 minutes that it requires to do so, and play. And that's how you get better. Practice doesn't make perfect, but it makes you better.
Okay.
Sure.
Cool. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the different types of tournaments later, so I'll save that for then.
Yeah.
But you mentioned kind of online versus offline. Yeah. Can you walk us through your thought process on those? Yeah.
Okay. So there are tournaments. Not two types of tournaments, but I want to talk about two types of tournaments. The first one's going to be the online scene, online tournaments. And I'm just going to go through the like pros and cons for it. The pros for online tournaments are that you will get reach a larger pool of people. You're not limited by the barriers of transportation, of cars, of trains, whatever. People can play from their computers at home when they're getting ready to go to bed, or when they're doing their math homework, that sort of thing. It doesn't take a lot of effort to set these up, and I'll actually be going into that later on, as far as how you can set up online tournaments, but the more people, the merrier. The bigger the tournament, I feel, up to a certain point, of course, but the bigger the tournament, the more it allows for us to interact and have fun, because that's what this is about.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of limit for like how many people just becomes unmanageable? Like, can you do hundreds of players?
It depends on the system that you have for some of the community cups. So for like ESL and Zotac, I know right now they're capping them at 512, which is a good number as far as brackets are concerned. But eventually that's going to expand even more, and I'm going to call it now. We'll have 1024, we'll have 2048, and it really depends on the site that you use, whether it can handle it or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But to keep it manageable, if you're doing like a first tournament, I would probably recommend you keep it around 50 at the maximum, just because that'll give you enough players to promote competition, but it'll also, it won't overwhelm you if it's your first time. You know, you can handle 50 people so long as they're all in an IRC channel or raid call and you've organized them correctly.
Okay.
Sure.
Very cool.
Yep. Another benefit to go to having an online tournament, what you'll see in a lot of the community tournaments is you'll have people from overseas. So it now becomes an international tournament. So you have people from Europe, you have people from South America. Occasionally you'll have people from Asia. So it's a blending of the cultures. And one thing you'll find is when you do that, the metas all mix, which is a really cool thing to see. Cause I don't know if you watched the tournament that Amaz hosted, I think yesterday, and I think today was the second round for it, but it was with a couple of countries within Asia. I don't know the specifics for it, but I was watching the games and you've just found the craziest things, which just seem normal. It was like a handlock mage, and I had never seen that before.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it was quite interesting. That's all I can say. And it was awesome though. So you got to see a bunch of different players kind of bring together their different metas, and from there.
And just to clarify for people, meta kind of describes kind of the big picture strategy, right? The idea that, you know, aggressive warlock was really popular. Then the beast hunter got really popular, and then control warrior. Like that's kind of the meta. Like which decks are being played the most? And it kind of makes sense that because other regions are, you know, insulated, North America is playing against North America, Europe's playing against Europe, that sort of stuff, that they would develop differently. So getting to see new decks pop out, that's really interesting.
It was incredible to watch because I'd never seen anything like that in North America or Europe. And a lot of times you'll find that Europe and North America mix a little bit more because the regions are closer together, mm-hmm. And they're not as insulated as you're saying as America or Asia.
Yeah.
When you do put all of those different regions together, you'll find that some regions will be better than others. Some players will stand out a lot more than others, but just allows for growth. And that's kind of what you try and strive for in a community like this.
So for someone's first tournament, say a listener is planning to, all right, I'm going to host a 50 player tournament. Is taking it international, is that challenging? That seems like it'd be hard if someone's like,
oh yeah,
12 hour different time zone.
Yeah. For your first tournaments, you can open it up and give it that option, but you don't really want to be aiming for that international audience, I guess. Most of the time it's going to be people that you know, friends that you have on Hearthstone, and then friends of friends. That's what I would recommend you make your first tournament. But if you were to create something successful and it were to grow and grow and grow, then the online tournaments, as opposed to offline, which we'll get to next, online has that pro that the regions can intermingle.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, now, so what are the downsides to online?
So the downsides, of course, are internet issues. So
oh, yeah.
When mom unplugs the router, you lose. Okay?
Yeah.
That's as simple as it is.
Do you do any sort of forgiveness on that sort of thing? Or is it just, if that happens, sorry, you lost?
It's so very difficult with things like that. If you're running a tournament of 30 to 40 people, then that's probably something where you talk to an administrator and you talk to the player that you're facing and try and work something out. When I run smaller tournaments, I do try and work with that. But when you're running tournaments 500 people or such, there's really no way that you can be forgiving. Because when you're forgiving, let's say in two or three matches, it holds up the entire tournament another hour, up to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just a domino effect, which is brutal.
Yeah. Plus it seems really hard to verify that his mom unplugged the router and that he didn't rage quit because he was losing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. And though that's that's one of the big concerns with online tournaments, but you've just got to adapt to it. If there's any doubt at all, then it's probably a safe decision to go with the roll call, as bad as that sounds.
Yeah. All right. And then any other cons?
Yeah, so I've actually been running into this issue for the past few weeks, maybe a month or so. When you have international tournaments or tournaments that allow for other people from different regions, you're going to run into language barriers. We have people, like I said, from South America who only speak Spanish. That is it. So interacting with them whenever they have an issue is next to impossible. I don't speak fluent Spanish, but we have a couple admins that do. So I try and work around it. But for the most part, if your tournament does grow to be that large, then it's almost a requirement that you need to make the native language the requirement. So for us, if there's, for whatever reason, no way to resolve the issue, then the English-speaking person is given the default win.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because if you can't understand them, I mean...
Yeah, communication can be a big barrier sometimes.
That's really hard, man, because, I mean, sure, we have stuff like Google Translate, but it's so bad. You can't really trust any of that at this point.
You can get an idea of what they're saying, but nothing too in-depth, so...
Yeah. So are you actually listing that on, like, your requirements now for the tournament? Like, have to be able to speak language X?
Yes, we always have English as a requirement for a tournament. And that way, as people know going into it, it's a North American tournament. They are required to speak English.
Yeah.
And if not, and they play and there are no issues, then great. That's fine. Completely fine. And no one knows any difference. It's only really when the issues arise that becomes another issue.
Yeah. Have you had people get really upset about that?
Not particularly. They understand it's a North American tournament for the most part. And if they can't communicate with us if they can't communicate with us and we can't communicate with them, there's not really a way to get upset. Understand each other.
Well, you just see how many exclamation points they use, and then you can guess how upset they are.
Yeah, if it's over 3, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For sure. Cool. What else is the downsides to online, do you think? Anything else?
I mean, you're going to have issues with online tournaments all the time, whether it's from toxicity because people aren't face-to-face or... I mean, Hearthstone, you don't have that much of an issue with it because the community overall is so great, which I love about it. So, I mean, you'll run into small things, whether it's lag, server issues, your tournament format that you set up isn't perfect, et cetera, et cetera. But those were the main ones.
Okay, cool. So why should people do offline instead? Because, I mean, at this point, online sounds pretty perfect.
Right, and for the most part, if you're setting up a tournament, I would highly recommend that you do online just because it makes things a lot easier. It's a convenience thing, so online tournaments are great. Now, where offline becomes beneficial is when, I guess, two scenarios. If it's a professional event where you want to have professional players interacting with each other and have a production, okay, so let's say DreamHack, for example, or the second situation is where you want to have a very personal tournament. So let's say a group of friends or a school event or a club, something like that, where you want to have 20 to 40, maybe 50 people in a tournament where we all have our gaming laptops or computers or whatnot, and you can just have a big LAN, and that is some of the coolest tournaments that you can have, in my opinion. Because you do get to interact with people face-to-face while playing the game that you all love.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You can actually build some relationship, make some friends that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. Okay, so it's kind of the two extremes, right? It's either like the most casual of tournaments because it's just friends wanting to hang out, sort of. And and then the most hardcore tournaments that want offline and kind of everything in between online is better. Does that seem fair?
Seems very fair.
Okay.
Yeah, good way to put it.
Cool. So obviously cons with offline, I'm guessing getting everyone in one location has to be a nightmare. Do you ever offer to like pay for their travel, or does everyone just have to cover themselves?
It all depends on the organization. I mean, for me, I'm just speaking from my personal experience and whatnot. I guess I should say I'm not speaking on the behalf of any organization. So, I mean, for some of the big events and whatnot, like DreamHack, I'm sure that there were stipends given to have players flown to where the event was being held, at which point then, let's say, the hotel was paid for and food, so that you, again, this is a professional event, so you want these people, you want to encourage them to come compete at your event.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. But if it's a small tournament with your friends, you're probably not going to pay to have them travel there.
Yeah. Although, if anyone's hosting a tournament and wants to pay to bring me out there, you know, I'll just throw it out there. I won't turn that down.
Hey, if anyone in LA wants to host a tournament, I am more than willing to let them pay for my plane ride from Virginia.
Yeah. And maybe like a lobster dinner or something like that, you know.
I prefer steak, but yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Let's just go surf and turf. We'll meet in the middle. How about that?
Sounds good. It's a date.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So, all right. So that sounds like the deal. For most of our listeners, online is the way to start, unless you just want to meet with your friends. Because, I mean, another pro, I guess, for offline is you get the little card backing, right? You get the Fireside Gathering card back when you do that, which is cool.
Yeah, that's the entire reason why we set up these tournaments, actually.
Just to get those card backs?
Absolutely.
For sure. All right, so, I mean, how do you decide when you're setting up a tournament, like, how competitive you want it to be?
Well, tournaments, just from the idea of them, should be competitive. I mean, it is a group of people who are testing their limits, essentially, to find out who's the best. So, I recommend that when you set up a tournament, you do it with the idea or with the goal in mind to make it the most competitive possible. Because although let's say it is friends and it's in person, the reason why you're there is to play the game. And if you're not going to play the game to your best ability, why play? That's something that I'm very passionate about. I am a very competitive person. So when I play a video game, I go hard.
All right. I like it.
But I guess it comes down to you can't have a tournament too competitive in the idea that it is your friends, let's say a smaller land group, it is your friends that are playing. So you're not going to have production behind it. You're not going to have necessarily seeds weighted to figure out, let's say, his three matches counted more than this other person's three matches. Yeah. You know, it's going to be an informal atmosphere that you want to have an air of competitiveness to it.
Yeah. It seems like it's pretty easy to get started, and not like, I don't want to say not competitively, right? But without that waiting seeds and stuff for the bare bones of what you need to do a tournament, it's pretty easy to get started. And then you can kind of worry about that more complicated stuff later.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So I got to know, now, I know you've run a lot of different tournaments. You've talked about a few of them. Can you just kind of run down the different tournaments that you've been a part of so far and why you chose to do them?
So, a quick book of these tournaments. I just want to preface, like I said before, I don't speak on half of the esports league of America. I'm just simply giving my experiences working with them because I love what they do. I love what they stand for. And so everything that I've experienced, I want to share with our listeners and everyone that's going to tune into this. So I started in the League of Legends scene, and a lot of the tournaments that we ran were called Gopher Laws. And Gopher Laws were sort of like, let's say, our open tournaments for Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. And it's teams playing against each other. We had a simple bracket system, which would hopefully automatically move people forward so long as they submitted scores. And then at the very end, we would have them occasionally streamed. So Gopher Laws were an informal kind of tournament for teams. And then that developed into, I started with what we call EP, which is the, I guess, challenge for League of Legends. It's kind of, think of like AAA, it's AAA if you think of Riot Games, LCS being professional. Mm-hmm. So I got to work with a lot of professional, semi-professional players doing that, and it really did give me a lot of experience dealing with people and networking and understanding different schedules and trying to make everything fit together. And that's when you start becoming an admin in the competitive scene or professional scene, that's a lot of what it is, just making sure everything runs smoothly. Again, there's that OCD coming into play. You want to make sure everything's perfect.
Yep.
So after League of Legends, I moved to Hearthstone, and then Hearthstone, we started setting up tournaments as far as like our Sunday tournaments, our Wednesday tournaments, and then we have King of the Hill on Tuesdays. So again, working with a lot of players and making sure that everything goes well. And most of the time, we did use single elimination brackets. And keep that in mind, because I am going to go into the, some of the pros and cons between the different types of formats later on. Mm-hmm. But single elimination brackets just allows for quicker tournaments when you have large numbers of people. Mm-hmm. I guess after that, we've developed, I developed Hearth Wars, which is going to be the invite tournament that we'll be hosting tomorrow. So Hearth Wars is, it's a different format in that it's a round robin stage where winners then move to single elimination. But we also include more games, so like best of fives into it. And then that tournament itself is going to be sort of pitting the pros against each other and seeing kind of how much we can do in the professional scene of Hearthstone to, I guess, help it grow and allow people to watch their favorite players. Because most of the times when you watch streams and such, it's one person, one team. Some of the events have a couple of them, and seven teams in one stream. I mean, that's quite a variety.
Yeah. So is that what you're doing? You're putting all the teams onto one stream?
So it's going to be a little difficult to just explain the format, but the way that it works is there's going to be four group stages, and in each group stage is going to be four players. None of the group stages will have teammates together because we really don't want to have a tournament where teammates knock each other out, because that's just not productive.
Yeah.
So there, each member in the group of four is going to play against each other, and then whoever has the highest, say, win rate or most will advance to the semifinals. Okay. All of those games are best of three, which is much better than best of one, and I'll explain that, explain why later. Once you hit the semifinals, it's best of five, single elimination. So in the semifinals, you have four players. The two players that lose will go to a third place match, and then the two players that win will go to the finals. Both the third place match and the finals will be streamed, as well as one of the semifinals. So the difficulty with having so many players and so many matches and getting it all done in one day while still streaming it is figuring out how to, I guess, capitalize on the games, because you want the best games broadcasted. You ideally want as many games broadcasted without taking too much time. So what we did is four games will go on at once. Stages go green. Then round two starts, same thing will happen. Round three, same thing will happen. So at the end of the group stages, there are three matches that are streamed. You have the semifinal, then you have third place match and finals. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just to kind of help give tools for people that are listening to, because I know we're covering tools later too, what sort of software are you using to get people's live streams onto your live stream?
So I'm going to keep some of that, confidential, just because there's a lot of work that goes into making these things possible.
Okay.
But the idea, the general idea behind it is that two players are going to be streaming to a location, and then from that location, you will have that on your main stream.
Okay.
So we'll just say, for example, both of their Twitch streams are up, and then our production guy can take both of those streams and then flip-flop them using XSplit or FFSplit or whatever you want to use. Mm-hmm. And so whoever's turn it is will be showed played. And there are a bunch of cool things that you can do, like set up overlays to advertise things. You can make the screen look fancy. You can set it up so both hands are showing at once, but sometimes that gets buggy. So if you watched any major Hearthstone tournament, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Okay, very cool. All right, so can you kind of walk us through, because you mentioned single elimination versus some of the other types. How do you pick which one to do?
Okay, so the types of tournaments, I'm just going to go down the main ones. You have single elimination, double elimination, and round robin. Single elimination, if you lose a match, you're out. Simple as that. Double elimination, if you lose a match, you go to the lower brackets. If you lose again, you're out. Two losses and you lose. Round robin is kind of my ideal tournament setup, just because regardless of how many, I guess, games you lose, you can still keep playing, whether it's points for the next tournament that you host or whether it's just for pride. You keep playing, and then get practice, you get experience. So if you have six people in a group, you'll play five games. So that's why I kind of enjoy that. Hearthstone itself is a game with a lot of what we call RNG, things that are based off of almost luck, things that you can't control. And so the more games that you put into a tournament, the more rounds that make up a tournament, then the less what we call variance is involved. And variance is just, again, those things that you can't really control. It's more of a stats game.
Yeah, like things like the Mad Bomber and stuff like that, where it's like,
right,
you play it and you can put the odds in your favor, but sometimes you just get unlucky.
Right. So using that same analogy, if you play a Mad Bomber on an empty board, it has the chance to hit your opponent's face, your face, and itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But let's say you play the Mad Bomber on a board with five other minions. Now you have the chance for it to hit those five other minions, your opponent's face, yours, and itself. So it just increases.
Although I don't think it can hit itself, just for the record, because I know I'm going to get angry emails about that.
Can it not?
Okay, I don't think it can.
Well, in this case, I'll just claim that I'm very tired.
you've already given your case for why you have every right to be tired. So,
sorry for that misstep.
No.
But you get the general idea. The more things that are on the board, the more factors that you add into it, the less chance of it actually, let's say, hitting your own face three times.
Yeah.
Right? Because every time that it happens, it has the probability of hitting those other elements as well. So when you add more games into it, let's say we have a best of seven instead of a best of three, then you take out the chance that your opponent just got lucky on the first game and then had the advantage. Because now you have to win four games out of the seven instead of just two or three.
So it seems more likely that the better deck, the better player will come out the winner in that case, right?
The less variance that's involved, the more skill is needed to win. That's just the general idea.
Okay, so in a perfect world with infinite time, would you do like a best of 20 essentially for everybody?
I would never do a best of 20 because that would take so long. I think, and we're working with a bunch of different formats on it, but round robin seemed to be very good as far as weeding out those that are the lesser players. The winners will eventually win. The better players will eventually win. And that, I guess, a best of seven is a very good amount just because it requires, again, four wins out of the seven, which is a decent amount. Let's say you have a deck list limit of seven or eight, then it allows you to have a little more strategy involved into it. Let's say I can counterpick two decks to the one that he just played as opposed to only one.
How do you do that? How do you handle how many decks people are allowed to have, or how does that, or changing their decks between matches and stuff?
In open tournaments, most of the time, they say there is no limit. I mean, because there's no way to really regulate it.
Yeah.
One big thing that I would highly recommend that you don't do in tournaments if you're setting up your own is to not allow sideboarding. Just no sideboarding is allowed. And what I mean by that is after a match or after a game is finished, you have the option to cancel out of the match and then create another deck to directly counter what your opponent just played. I feel like that is taking a little too far. So if an opponent were to cancel the challenge, that would be, in my opinion, an automatic disqualification in a perfect tournament.
Okay, yeah, so they could have up to 9 decks built and use any of them, but they can't edit decks during the match.
Right, and yeah, that again, sense. It allows for skill. So the better of a deck builder you are at the very beginning, the more it will show.
Yeah, and do you require, because the one tournament I've played in, they required that the winner of the first game keep the same deck. Do you do that, or can both players swap decks?
Different tournaments do different things. In the ESL tournaments right now, we like to allow to swap whenever. May not change in future events. I know.
Yeah.
I think that provides for a more fun atmosphere.
I do too. I really like that, actually, because there's mind games, right? Because you think well, he just beat me, so he's going to feel confident in that deck. Is he going to want to change? But I know you're thinking that, so then I will change.
We have that happen all the time. And in that strategy channel that I was telling you about earlier, when two top themselves, they'll go ahead and message each other through that and say, wow, that was fun. Maybe I'll play Druid next. And so it adds in even more mind games. And
oh,
so
man.
It's just this big strategy. What do I think he's playing? What does he think that I'll play, et cetera, et cetera. So
that's really funny.
But in an ideal tournament, I would recommend that winner does keep that deck. That's my personal opinion. And it makes it a little more fair as far as competing, because then it gives the loser a chance to get back another game.
Yeah.
And then, so it does give you an advantage if you win the first game. Let's say in a best of three, you win the first game, you're one up. You have, I guess, let's say a higher chance to lose the second game, but because you've lost, you can now win that third game easier.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So I've got a list here of the things that I think we've said make up the best tournament.
Okay.
Just as kind of a quick list for people that are listening that maybe want to build, you know, start a tournament. This is what, and so I'm going to read it, Nathan, and you correct me if I'm wrong on anything.
Okay.
So online, make sure your tournament's online. Use the round robin format.
Yep.
Grab up to 50 players. Do best of sevens. Would you lower that? Since we are working in a world with real time constraints, are you happy with best of seven?
Yeah, in a world with real time constraints, if you're doing round robin, it would probably be easier to do it with best of three or best of five. And the reason why I say that is because best of three, while it doesn't have as many games, it does make it a little bit quicker. So if you're in a group of six people and you're gonna play five games regardless, that'll just make it move on a little bit more quickly. And because there are five games in that group, there's less variance as it is, just because you're playing so many different players already.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so a couple last three pieces. Winner keeps their deck. The loser can change.
Right.
No sideboard, so if you exit out of the match, disqualified. And last but not least, stream it somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Streaming is something that I always encourage, especially when we do open tournaments. We don't have any that are streamed for the open tournaments right now, like through our channels. So I actually set aside 3 to 5 minutes before every tournament, and I say, if you are a streamer, link your channel. And from that, let's say we have a chat room of 50 people. If 3 people put in that stream, then they can all go and watch them. And that just kind of builds up the community. If you can find followers from different tournaments and things like that, and they recognize that you're a good player, then that's just something that you can do that will hopefully become your livelihood if you want to go professional. Again, there's a lot more to it than that. And another thing that you need to be careful on is if you allow streams for a tournament, you need to make sure that they're on a delay. And the reason for that is ghosting. As bad as it is, people are going to cheat. And it is the it's the, I guess, responsibility of the tournament administrator to make that to make the chance of cheating as small as possible.
Yeah,
it does fall on the administrator.
So ghosting is basically people watching the stream of the person they're playing against, so they know what's in their hand.
Yes, at the same time.
At the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, because then it's like playing a game while seeing your opponent's hand.
Which is a huge advantage.
Yep.
Is that delay something like you set up through your Twitch account or through your streaming software?
So Twitch does run a natural delay, whether it's, I believe they moved it to 30 seconds. If you use XSplit or FFSplit, you can actually set it through that program itself to 5 to 7 minutes. I mean, you could adjust that however you want. 5 to 7 minutes is normally fine, because at that point, I mean, the game's mostly over.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. I feel pretty good about this. I really want at least one listener to, like, put together a small tournament, because I this format here...
I'll compete.
The kind of UI... Yeah, I will too. Seriously. So, yeah, if you put it together, let us know. This format you put together here with your favorites, I really like as well. That seems like a really good tournament.
One other thing that I would add to that.
Yeah.
The round robin, while that does determine winners for those groups, you're going to need some way to kind of figure out the winner of the entire thing. So from round robin, I recommend having a single elimination bracket from those winners where they face off in a single elimination bracket. So let's say A faces B, C faces D. And then after a best of seven, because you do want to make those kind of as even as possible, after that best of seven, the winners move forward, and then you have your championship. And that's really what the format for Hearth Wars is going to be. You have the group stages, round robin, into the single elimination semifinals to the finals.
Okay, and you do best of seven in the finals as well?
We're doing best of three. For time's sake, we're doing best of three in the group stages, and then best of five in the semis and finals.
Okay, very cool.
But the ideal tournament would be, I mean, essentially what we're looking at.
Very cool.
And it may be that we find in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, that we want to change up Hearth Wars. And the thing that I really enjoy about Hearth Wars is that we don't have any backing or sponsors, which may sound bad at first, but I like it because it allows us to react to what the community wants. If the community says, hey, we didn't like this portion of it, we're not obligated to keep that portion because our sponsor wants it. We can say, you're right. You're completely right. We're going to toss that out and create a better idea. We're going to completely change our format the week after because we found out a better one, et cetera, et cetera. It just gives us flexibility to respond to what the community says.
Yeah, I mean, that just lets you make the best tournament possible, which is awesome. And sponsors can always come later in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. So, all right, so we have a game plan. Let's say someone is listening to this podcast, and they're super excited. They want to do this tournament right now. There's still a lot of work that's got to be done, right? Do you have any, like, websites or tools that kind of help take care of that stuff? Because just getting excited about it is not enough.
Well, now that you mention it, actually, I think once you have all of that, you're done. It's just
okay.
As easy as that.
Why aren't we all running Hearth Wars? This could be easy.
Oh, my goodness. If only it were that easy. I like to use free tools.
Because, I like the sound of that.
Right. I mean, doesn't everyone like free things?
Yes.
For tournament structures, and I think that we'll be having this on our write-up.
We'll have links to all this stuff.
Okay,
sure.
Great.
On GameDiplomat.com.
Cool. GameDiplomat.com. So on tournament structures, there are three main ones that I don't necessarily use all the time, but are very good, and they're well made so that when you are creating your own tournament, you can utilize these. Xfire, they just redid their website, and it's a beautiful website. I mean, they really did it well, to the point where as the website becomes more and more developed, they're going to introduce more formats and things like that for Hearthstone specifically.
Wow.
Because the format for Hearthstone will be different from League of Legends, which will be different from StarCraft, because you have different factors for each.
Yeah, no, wait a second. Isn't Xfire, like, that chat client?
Yes.
So this is like they've actually done tournament stuff.
Yes, they basically introduced a entire tournament platform that you can kind of use. You can register your players on, you can register your teams, you can all sign up for tournaments that they have, like public tournaments that they host on their website. So that's a really cool thing to go on to. Let's say if you have a League of Legends 5 team or whatnot, you can go on and just put in League of Legends and then look for tournaments for North America that you can compete on based off of, let's say, you're higher than gold.
Yeah. So wow. This is really cool. Yeah, I'm looking through the site now. I had no idea they did all this stuff.
It is incredible.
Yeah. There's even a quick little button here for create custom tournaments. It promises quick and easy setup. Saves you time. Bam. Right.
I'm actually friends with with some of the heads for Xfire, and I've talked with them a lot about the different things that they're doing. There's a lot that they're going to be introducing in the upcoming months, or even weeks. So keep an eye for them. Another one is Challenge. I'm not a personal fan of Challenge, but I know a lot of tournament administrators that love it, and they do a lot on it.
So why aren't you a fan? I'm curious.
I'm just awful with tournament websites and making brackets. I've sat there for hours and hours and hours using a million different sites. Whatever reason is beyond me. It's like... It's like trying to do math homework if you failed algebra. You just can't do it.
All right. That's fair enough.
But it is a very good site. It's basic, easy to use for the general or for the normal person. It's a great site to go to. The second one is called Binary Beast. They offer a lot of different options. It's a very aesthetic look for it. So I recommend all three of these. They're all fantastic. I'm sure if you have questions or whatnot, or I guess support places that you can go to make sure that you set up your tournament properly.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenge is what we used. We did a small Happy Hearthstone tournament a couple months ago. And that's what we used just because that's really the only one I knew of.
Right.
But man, the Binary Beast looks very pretty and Xfire looks very promising too. I'm going to have to start playing around with these.
For sure. I mean, they're fantastic.
Cool. So what do you use for so the way we did this, and you'll probably laugh at this because I'm sure this is terrible, is we had people communicating via email.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it was basically like...
That's terrible.
Yeah. Because the tournament went over a week, right? It's like, here's your opponent, schedule your time with them, make it work.
Okay.
And then just every 24 hours, you have to get your next game in.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So clearly that sounds like not the way you would recommend people do this. So how do you get people connected and working together?
Right. So to viewers listening, do not set up a tournament through email. That sounds like so much work. Because there are just so many different things, like different variables that you can't control in that. And I'm not criticizing your tournament because I'm sure it was awesome. And I mean, it seems like a lot of work to me just because I've been using a lot of different systems for a long time and I'm used to them. But controlling the maximum number of variables as possible is really important. So if two people didn't email and they messed up and didn't play their match after the 24 hours, it doesn't leave you a lot of... let's say the email was just registered wrong or something like that. Again, I'm sure you had safeguards, but they're just small things in that system that, let's say, human error that could come about. And you really want to try and minimize those risks as much as possible. So what I like to do, let's just use ESL because that's the one we're working with today, actually. We have an IRC channel in which we recommend that all the players come to the channel and, let's say, check in. They can notify an admin, and let's say we have a Google sheet with all their names. And as soon as they check in, we just put a 1 next to their name. So we know that they're present and that they're going to be playing. If someone doesn't check in past a certain time, sorry, you missed check-in. As bad as that sounds.
So that's like on Google Drive you're talking about?
Yeah. So again, with our system, we've got a website and everything inbuilt to it. But when I run like my personal tournament, Hearth Wars, I found that Google Drive was one of the most effective things for organizing my thoughts, whether it's through the brainstorming process to creating brackets to making posters slash flyers. And for those of you that don't know about Google Drive, if you have a Gmail account, it's free. It's accessible from there. You go to your Gmail, and in the top right, there's an app button. There's the Drive symbol right underneath it. From Google Drive, it's all stored online, so it's like cloud-based storage, and you have access to I'll just use the Microsoft equivalent. So you have access to like Word documents, you have access to Excel, you have access to kind of let's call it Paint, like online Paint. So you can use a lot of different formats.
Yeah,
help me out here.
Lots of different document types.
Document types.
Yeah. Like, basically anything you would do in Microsoft Office, you can do on Google Drive. And I have to heartily recommend or like back up your recommendation, because we use it for all of our podcast notes, because the big perk is that you can share, right? So right now me and Nathan are in the same show document, and it shows me where he's typing, what he's highlighting. He can see me type in real time. So when you're trying to collaborate on something like a tournament, right? Nathan is now typing everything I'm saying. He is transcribing this podcast as we go. but it makes it super easy if you're doing anything community-wise. Like, and you can do stuff like create a spreadsheet that has the check-in information for the people in your tournament and make it public so other people can look at it but not edit it. Right, so you could have the players come in and be able to see who's checked in, but not be able to go in and uncheck their opponents to try and disqualify them or anything shady like that.
Right, and I really like it because it's all real time. So let's say you're doing that check-in process. From the moment check-in starts, you can have people message you through IRC, through Skype, through Raid Call, through whatever you want to use. And as soon as they do, an admin can go in through that public document, check you in, right down the line, so that you just make sure that everything's done right away and that everyone has access to it, so you don't have to worry about emailing to one person, waiting for them to receive it, writing up a response, and then sending it back to you. It's just fast.
Yeah. That definitely sounds better than our method. Okay, so you mentioned IRC. IRC, at least I've had a lot of resistance. Like, people don't always want to get IRC. Some people just don't like it. You mentioned also Skype earlier. Is that kind of the alternative?
Yeah. So if you're doing larger tournaments, IRC is, I don't want to say the best. Well, I guess IRC is the best one if you have over 100 to 150 people, just because it allows for everyone to be in that one channel and then ask questions right there to all the administrators. That's what we use. But if you're running a smaller tournament, it's something as easy as setting up a Skype channel and then inviting people. I mean, it really is that easy, and then you can just one by one.
Okay.
It's on Skype. So let's say someone says your name, it'll actually notify you and then highlight your name so you can see that they're addressing you.
Oh, very cool. That is super useful.
Yeah.
Very
That's
cool.
Through notifications, by the way.
Okay. So we'll have links, and you also mentioned Raid Call earlier. We'll have links to all these different apps and websites and stuff on the show notes, like we mentioned earlier. We do have one question here, actually. We mentioned that we're going to have you on the show to talk about this, and a listener sent in a question for you. It's
awesome.
Ian Zacharias. He asks, how do you handle miscasts? For example, suppose player A and B both have 10 health. Player A goes to cast Pyroblast for the win. However, he accidentally hits himself and ends up losing. Do you permit redos, or is there no room for mercy in Hearthstone?
So, I think it depends, again, on the type of tournament that you're running. If you are running a professional tournament like DreamHack, then there is no mercy in Hearthstone. If you go back and watch the VODs, and I think it's on Viagame, you'll see that players make a point that when they summon Leroy Jenkins, they play it down and then move their cursor all the way around so they're not touching any of the minions and they have no chance for misplay.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that separates professional players from us normal people. They have things down. They think about their strategies, and then they make sure that there is no possible way that they can misclick. So let's use Ian's example. Using that pyroblast, it's as simple as dragging your mouse to the left of the screen, moving it up, and then attacking face.
Yeah, don't move it over anything it could possibly cast on, essentially.
So if there's anything, let's say a prize pool, a significant sum of money, $500, that's completely on the player. Unfortunately, that was his misplay. He could have prevented it, and he did not. Now, if you're playing for fun with friends, it's one of those things you message a player, be like, hey, I misplayed. I would have won, except for I messed up. Would you like to, or would you allow us to remake the game? And of course, clear it through an admin. But that's one of those things that I'm a little more lenient on. Not in my personal tournaments, but that's something that I would be more lenient on if I were to run a friendly based game without a prize pool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, especially, sure. Yeah. And especially if you're starting off with your first tournament, it's mostly with friends or friends of friends. These are not the sort of people you're trying to antagonize or get in fights with, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, so he has one more question, unrelated to tournaments. He wants to know, what emote would you want added to the game? And Ian adds that he would like to add a "you're welcome" emote, that, or a board flipping emote for when you concede.
That's great. Oh my goodness. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Blizzard, please. So along those lines, I think it'd be awesome to have a "you're welcome" button. I don't know how many times that I've been playing in a game and let's say I make a fantastic play and then my opponent makes a better play. That's something where when they say thanks or sorry or whatnot, I can say "you're welcome" back. Or let's say we had a good game. They say thanks for the good game. You can say "you're welcome" back. It's just small things. Coming from the League of Legends scene where everything is so very, very toxic all the time. And some people may think I'm exaggerating a bit on it. They clearly haven't played League of Legends. It can be brutal. So coming from a scene like that to Hearthstone, it's one of those things like our worst, I guess the worst that could happen is someone messaging you after game and saying, "Wow, that was an awful game. You played poorly." At which point, you unfriend them. Like,
yeah.
there's nothing really that can make this community be toxic unless you allow people to do it. So a "you're welcome" button would be awesome because it would promote GM good manners, if you will.
I completely agree. I would love to see some sort of sarcasm toggle as well, because it's so hard for me to tell, like, because sometimes, you know, the flavor of the champions, you know, cause the emotes to be kind of confusing, like the rogue greetings is "the pleasure is mine," and it's like, are you really greeting me, or did you just do that because you killed my guy? Well, and you're trying to say that the pleasure is yours. And stuff like the hunters, that didn't quite hit the mark for his oops. I don't think I've ever seen that used to mean oops. It always seems to be used like sarcastically, like after I make a mistake, they go like, "That didn't quite hit the mark."
Like, you might have been facing me because that's what I like to do.
You do that? Yeah. And it's like, it wouldn't be bad. Like, I just don't know, right? I want to know if that person's insulting me, because I feel like a lot of times they aren't. It's just the way the emotes are. So if there was just like a little button there that was like, "Yes, they're being
sarcastic to you."
Yeah, like that.
I wish that you know it.
Yeah, they'd be like, "Okay, at least I know I can be upset about that." But most of the time, I'm just like, it's kind of like when you're in a group of people and someone makes a joke and you think it's about you and like maybe everyone's laughing at you, but you don't know. Like, it's like, it would just be better if I knew. Like, just
you want to laugh with, but you're not sure if that when you laugh, they're going to laugh more at you because it actually was about you.
Yeah, exactly. So when they say the oops, like if I say oops back or something like that, is that just going to make them laugh at me more? I don't want that.
Yeah, I don't want to be a fool.
Not any more than I already am.
Making fun of me.
Someone on the internet? No, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
So, all right. So before we move on to iTunes reviews and card of the week, any other advice for, you know, tournament startups out there?
Take your time. That's, I think, one of the biggest things. Make sure that your system and your format and everything like that is well done. Just do mock games with your, like, a friend that you have that's helping you with the tournament. Make sure that all the factors are going to match up so you don't run the tournament and then find out you have a fatal flaw within it, which makes your tournament not work.
Yeah.
That would not be good.
Another pro tip, avoid fatal flaws. I like
it. Avoid fatal flaws, for sure. Honestly, I wasn't going to put this out there, but I'm not opposed to, if someone creates a tournament or whatnot that they're watching this podcast, they can actually email me at slightnate@gmail.com, and I'll take a look at it. I mean, I will make time, especially thanks for having me again on the show. I'll make time to give back to the community, because that's really what this is all about. We're all volunteers that are working with Hearth Wars. We have no income coming in from this. We have no revenue that's going to motivate us to make this completely based off viewership or sponsors or anything like that. This is all completely for the community. We want to present a show to people. So if someone, on that same note, if someone wants to make a tournament and says, hey, I'm not completely sure if this will work, can you take a look at it? Just email me and I'll be able to give you tips on how to make it better, on what you could do to improve, on what's going to completely fail in the tournament before it happens. You know?
Yeah. No, that is super valuable. Anyone listening that's thinking about doing that, I highly recommend taking advantage of this. If I had done this, where were you like 2 months ago, Nathan, when I was doing my tournament and setting it up poorly?
I was in the brainstorming stages for Hearth Wars.
Okay. So you've emerged now with wisdom and experience that you can share with the rest of us.
Yeah, it happened overnight.
Awesome. I really appreciate you offering that to the listeners, Nathan. That's really cool.
For sure. Absolutely.
All right, so let's jump into our iTunes reviews. Before we do card of the week, we got five iTunes reviews this week. We're just on a roll. People are sending in reviews like crazy, I think because we did two episodes of Scott in a row, and people love Scott.
So I have big shoes to fill.
Yeah, but you can pass five reviews next week. All right, so if you guys liked Nathan's advice, write a review so we can top five next time, and Nathan can feel great about himself.
We have to make it a goal. Top five.
Maybe write a review about the person that you met when you go out and introduce yourself to someone playing Hearthstone. Tell us the story, how it happened. Maybe you'll find the love of your life. You never know.
Yeah, and even if you want to write a review saying, hey, this is a tournament that I've been inspired to do, that'd be something great as well. Let us know kind of what you got from the show.
That'd be very cool. All right, so I'm going to read these five reviews real fast. Chirike says, helpful on all levels. My friends have been into Hearthstone since the beginning of beta, but I just got in about a week ago. I listened to the latest two podcasts, Best Card and the Druid Deck, and it really helped me out. Subscribed. Maddie B77 says, great podcast. I'm new to the card game scene, never played Magic, but fell in love with Hearthstone. After listening to the few episodes, I've built a priest deck that is currently 20 and 4. And climbing. That's incredible.
That's great. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
That's better than my priest deck. Well done. he says, very valuable information, just a few simple concepts and tips just made it click for me. Thanks, guys. Keep them coming. Phil Bunny says, yo, I've been languishing with a shelf of no board games, a box full of Netrunner cards, and basically no meta. I was drooling over Team Covenant gameplays, listening to every Dice Tower review, and then one day Vassal was like, Hearthstone is pretty fun. So I've heard about the one thing, but man, popular stuff is usually dumb. Not Hearthstone. I recently quit Magic. Boom. You were just talking about making the move over from Magic, Nathan.
Right.
For the above reasons and more. And playing this amazing game has given me the meta I so desperately needed. Then I started to lose. we've all hit that point where like, wow, Hearthstone is fun. And then you start playing people that have decks much better than you. And
you lose 30 games in a row and you're like, huh.
Yeah.
Guess I'll try again tomorrow.
Yep. Phil Bunny says, enter you guys and others, but mostly you guys. Great podcast. Hope to be on it one day. Check me out. I'll put the link in the show notes. I ain't great yet. Promising.
Yeah, for sure.
I like his optimism there. Like, he knows he's going places.
For sure.
All right. Rhea Maya says, love the show. Very informative and has been helping me build better decks, and I learn at least a few things every episode. Keep up the great work and look forward to future episodes. I have to say, I learned more than a few things this episode, so I hope you did as well, Rhea Maya. So this is really cool. Tournaments is always one of those things like I'm vaguely aware of, but never really got involved in. It's inspiring. You've inspired me, Nathan.
Thank you. And I hope I inspired more than a few of you guys, because Hearthstone, again, is a game that's in its infancy. I said I'd keep saying it. I'm going to. There's so many opportunities for people that when they create their own tournaments to post them on various forums and whatnot, just to get the word out there. That's one thing we didn't really touch on, but if you go to Google and just type in Hearthstone forums, they're open forums where you can post that your tournaments there and just kind of make your mark for sure.
Oh yeah, that's really good. That's the whole part of the puzzle I forgot to talk about. Final review from the Shaddox says, great podcast for those who are new to Hearthstone. The host Josh is always clear and articulate and doesn't say every 5 seconds like another Hearthstone podcast.
That was my podcast.
Now I'm going to be super sensitive to that, because I used to have a problem of saying all the time, and I'm surprised that I'm not. But I guess that's good. Ah, I just did it right there.
Curse you,
the Shaddox. This is some sort of like jinx he just put on me, right? Like, I wasn't saying it before, but now I'm always going to say all right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So the Shaddox also says, I recommend this podcast as a go-to for new players, as it focuses more on card quality and play basics rather than current meta strategies. The blue-collar everyman of Hearthstone podcast. Keep up the great work. Thanks. I'm going to try and get Larry the Cable Guy on the show so we can team up our blue-collar kind of styles together. Seems like it'll mesh. All right, let's get into card of the week. Nathan, sadly, chickened out of singing. I'm sorry to have to call you out, Nathan.
Unfortunately, I did. My voice is kind of gone from all the work that I've been doing.
But we do have this actually really cool jingle that I've been wanting to hear for a long time. It's one of my favorites that got submitted from way back when we did our beta key contest.
It's now time for Card of the Week. What could it be? The Card of the Week. The time has come, it's finally here. The Hearthstone Card of the Week.
So the card of the week this week is Spellbender. It's a spell, obviously. It's a mage only, and it's epic, and it's a secret. 3 mana, when an enemy casts a spell on a minion, summon a 1/3 as the new target. What do you think, Nathan?
An awful, awful card. But I will say that there are a lot of fun uses to it. For instance, I was actually playing against a paladin deck, and I don't know why I drafted this card. It was an arena. I have no idea why I chose this card, but I did. And then paladin actually went ahead and buffed his minion 4/4, except... surprise.
Boom, you get a 5/7?
It was a delight. Single-handedly the entire game. So, I guess the rule of thumb is, if you're playing mage against paladin, throw in Spellbender, because it will save you. For sure.
There you go. Guaranteed. Nathan's guarantee. Play this card, it will save you. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty fun, right? Stealing buffs is always super fun. It even kind of prevents removal at its worst, like if they do sap or something like that, it just avoids it. Would you say, if you had to choose between this and Counterspell, which is another mage secret, same mana cost, but it just says cancels the opponent's next spell, which would you take?
Honestly, I'd probably pick Counter, just because actually Counterspell, it's just a spell, it's not a single target, correct? Yeah, Counterspell for sure. The reason why, let's say you're in a mirror match against a mage or whatnot with a lot of spells, let's say they go ahead and try and clear your board, right? Counterspell is going to stop that, which that would almost single-handedly let you win a game. an entire turn wasted. You have an entire board that they assumed would be gone, and you're good to go. So, I mean, I feel like Counterspell is better because it prevents AoE removal, and AoE is a big factor in the current meta. Spellbender has a lot of fun techniques and things that you can do with it, such as playing against Paladin, a Rush Paladin. But in the current meta, I feel like Counter would be better, personal opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. My heart doesn't want you to be right, because I love fun cards, right? I'm not a super competitive Hearthstone player. I don't really mind losing every now and then as long as I'm having fun. And this is the sort of card I love to put in my deck, just for those moments where you do steal their Blessing of Kings. Mm-hmm. It's totally worth it to me that, yeah, sure, I'm totally blanking. What's the mage AoE?
Flame Strike,
thank you. Sure, you just Flame Striked all my guys for three games in a row. But the next game, I steal someone's Blessing of Kings and I feel amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I agree. It is super frustrating. I actually just used this card yesterday against a Paladin, and I was really hoping to get that Blessing of Kings, right?
Right.
And they used Hammer of Wrath instead. And so it's kind of like a wash. Like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'm glad it didn't kill my Chillwind Yeti, who was injured, but it wasn't great. And it's super frustrating when they start casting non-targeted spells. Like they're going out there doing Holy Wrath and Divine Favor, or not
Consecration.
Divine Favor. Yeah, Consecration. Thank you. Like all that sort of stuff, and you're just like the secret's sitting there waiting to erupt and ruin their day, and it's just not happening.
Right, and I mean that's where Counterspell would be better, just because so many AoE.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I think that does it for the show. We're gonna have full show notes. Along with everything Nathan talked about today, links to all the stuff, also his guides. We'll also put up our list of the recommended, perfect starter guide for the rules for your very first tournament up on the blog. That'll all be on GameDiplomat.com. GameDiplomat.com, not Kong. That would be cool as well, though. Just swing by there, click Hearthstone on the top, you'll see it. Next on the show, I'm probably going to be taking a little bit of a break because babies in 1 to 2 weeks. But I'm talking actually with Scott and Redbeard about doing a deck battle episode while I'm gone. So hopefully hand the reins of the show to them, let them do a deck battle episode while I'm gone. I haven't talked with Redbeard about this at all yet. So surprise, Redbeard. I'm going to be sending you an email soon to see if you want to do that. But that may be up on the show next. If not, we'll get back into it in a little bit, in probably a couple weeks after I take off. On other shows, though, WoW Pet Battle Crew, we're doing a review of a team this week. You can jump on over there if you need pets to battle in WoW. That's it. Also on Threshold, where we talk about Hex, the other card game that's out there and big. There's tons of E3 news, and they're going to continue recording while I'm gone. So if you miss me and you just want to still listen to podcasts I'm a part of, you can go listen to that, thresholdpodcast.com. Of course, we want to hear what you thought about the show. Let us know if you run your own tournaments, what you think, which tools you use, if you are already running tournaments that we can add to our guide that Nathan's put together. You can contact me on Twitter, @JAugustine, or email me directly, ajosh@outlook.com. And just let us know what you think. On Google+, we have our Hearthstone group as well. Go there, search for Hearthstone. People talking about Hearthstone all day, every day. If you want to get people for your tournament, that is the place to go.
For sure. That's actually how I met Josh. So.
Yeah, it was actually. I totally forgot about that. Through that group. Yeah, that's awesome. So there you go. It's proven. It's effective. So Nathan, where can people find more of you and what you're doing?
So tomorrow's going to be our first event for Hearth Wars. It's going to be the Invitational. We're going to be having teams. If you're familiar at all with the Hearthstone scene, you're going to recognize them. We have Tempo Storm, VVV, Meet Your Makers, DKMR, Good Guy, Mana Grind, and Ferris. And then we're going to have two special guests, Guy on the North American ladder name Isocase. Also, that's Admirable, who casted for DreamHack. So we have a loaded lineup.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to be going live tomorrow at 3 p.m. PST or PDT, and then EDT. If you are in Europe, then that's 12 a.m. Tuesday night CEST, so you may tune in for the beginning by Reyna himself. on his own channel. He was actually super gracious to let us use his own channel. So it's twitch.tv/Raynad27. But we also have our own Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/Hearthwars, same spelling as in Hearthstone. And then we also have our Twitter account at Hearthwars. If you want to follow me, you can. It's super simple. SlightNate. And I tweet a lot about Hearthwars, the scene in, I guess, the competitive scene for Hearthstone itself, and just kind of keep up to date. So thank you.
Very cool. Yeah, so we'll put links to all that in the show notes as well down at the bottom so you can find all of Nathan's stuff. Nathan, thank you for taking the time to guide us through this process, because this is something that's kind of new and exciting. Like you said, the whole esports scene is just starting to grow. It's something we can still be a part of. It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the time to get your foot in the door, for sure.
Awesome. So thank you very much. Thanks again for offering your advice to people that set up tournaments. I heartily recommend, again, everyone take advantage of that if you set up a tournament. That is a great resource.
Yeah, absolutely. If they have questions, again, it's slightnate@gmail.com. Thanks very much for having me on the show, Josh.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, man.
Watching the next one, or listen to the next one after that baby comes.
Yeah. Oh, man. I may sound like a zombie and be saying like crazy. That reviewer is going to be very disappointed. Shaddux will just write another review with 0 stars.
Right.
It sounds like baby has stolen his soul. It'll be true. So thanks again for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you all next time.